You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
This is Ann Coppola with Corrections.com, and you are listening to another installment of our Corrections Connection podcast. Today we are speaking with Bill Sturgeon, an expert on emergency preparedness and counterterrorism planning. He has over 35 years of experience in the field of criminal justice and has managed security operations for sheriff's offices and correctional agencies all over the United States. Bill is currently working on a book that discusses how terrorism presents a much greater threat to the corrections world than we might think. The book is going to be published on Corrections.com, and Bill is here today to tell us more about it and read us some excerpts. So welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Ann, for having me. It's real a pleasure to be with you today.
So what is the connection between prisons and jails and terrorism?
Well, throughout history, prisons have proven to be targets for various disgruntled groups, either terrorists, rebels, freedom fighters, revolutionaries, etc. I don't think that anyone would argue that prisons throughout history have been places where some horrible atrocities have taken place and have been used to carry out very terrible things. In a variety of foreign countries, even today, prisons represent brutal, inhumane governments. These prisons employ torture and murder and rape, mutilation, etc. We saw it with Saddam Hussein's prisons and various other prisons around the African continent. The international terrorists know only what they have been told. And so consequently, they believe that American prisons are the same as theirs. They don't understand that in America, we have private, not-for-profit companies that set standards and ensure the care and custody of inmates. They also have not been told that inmates can access the courts to address what they believe to be any constitutional violations of their civil rights. Many nations do not afford inmates that luxury.
And when you talk about terrorists infiltrating American prisons, what groups are you talking about, and how are these inmates different from other kinds of inmates?
Well, for this broadcast, I think what we'll talk about basically are international terrorists. We do have domestic terrorists, whether they're eco-terrorists or white supremacists. Extreme groups on either side could be considered terrorists. But for this podcast, we'll be discussing only international terrorists. So, my opinion, the difference between domestic terrorists and international terrorists and the difference between international terrorists and other inmate classifications is the majority of international terrorists have a deep-seated religious belief that to die for their belief or their cause will win them a heavenly reward for all eternity. Additionally, in some foreign cultures, families of dead terrorists gain great respect and wealth for the sacrifices or martyrdom of their terrorist relatives. When your enemy, and I think this is something that people need to remember that work in corrections, most of the normal criminals that we work with in corrections are in there, and yes, they could be very violent and very disruptive and all of that. But this is the key point, I think. When your enemy does not fear death, you have a formidable force to guard against. Most of America's inmates in prisons and jails have not given up their desire to live. Whereas some of these terrorists, however, live for the opportunity to gain status in the organization and the entrance into heaven. If they should kill a staff member or other inmates, then the terrorists will not hesitate to do so. They will do this just to gain status, just to be someone of importance.
And if a corrections administrator has an inmate like this in their facility, like what you just described, are there any kinds of programs or activities that should be developed for those inmates?
Yes, I think there are a number of issues that have to be examined when trying to develop programming for what I call a terrorist inmate. Here are a few, I think, for people to consider. When doing so, you have to consider there is a language barrier that has to be overcome. And when we're dealing with terrorists, there are several cultural and religious barriers that have to be overcome. So when you're trying to develop any kind of programming, you have to understand that. Should the facility facility, I've heard that there are facilities who permit them to meet on occasion because they found out that it helps reduce violence, the different international terrorists. I think if you do that, if you allow them to meet and congregate together, then you should have someone there that can record it and also, you know, make sure that they understand the language that's being spoken and have, you know, an understanding of the nuances and even the nonverbal communication techniques of that particular culture. Obviously, it goes with the turf. All telephone conversations must be monitored and recorded as soon as possible, translated and shared with other intelligence sources and counterterrorism agencies. It's a big problem. It's not just a corrections problem. It is a international problem, terrorism. So we don't have corrections, don't have all the answers. So we have to incorporate with all kinds of other groups to see if we can get answers. And I think the sharing of the information that we gain in prisons and getting it out to as many people, intelligence sources and counterterrorism sources and agencies as possible and getting their feedback will only help us in developing better programs, better security, better staffing, and better ways of managing these terrorist inmates. Visiting must be closely monitored, and all visitors should be thoroughly searched and scrutinized. And scrutiny should be conducted before the visits, during the visits, and after the visits. And one of the things I've noticed, say, over the past 5 or 6 years, is we really have kind of slackened up with our visiting procedures and visiting scrutiny. And I think if we're going to have those kinds of inmates in the prisons today, we're going to really have to retighten the visiting scrutiny.
And things like the visiting procedures and the monitoring, the telephone calls, that all sounds a lot like things that corrections personnel already do in their day-to-day routines.
You know, one wonderful thing about corrections is that our non-routine is a routine. By that I mean during the training of correctional personnel, you know, we instruct them not to set a routine, yet day-to-day correctional operations is a routine. If you look at most penitentiaries and most jails, they're about as punctual as Big Ben. While this stabilizes the operation of a correctional facility, this is very inviting for terrorists to exploit should they target a correctional facility. Minor changes in daily routines and schedules can be disruptive to a terrorist's planning activities. Some basic changes can be change the schedule of outside patrols. You know, don't have them always on the same patrol. Increase the number of outside patrols. Every so often, put another patrol on. Have two instead of one, or three instead of two, or whatever your routine is. Change the time you relieve tower officers. Work with the union officials if that's necessary.
So now you've talked a lot about how we can improve the day-to-day operations in jails and prisons. But what about if a jail or prison were ever to come under a terrorist attack?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the terrorists today are practicing attacking prisons and police stations and places like that, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. So it's not unusual to say if. It very possibly could be that prisons or police stations, whatever, can come under attack. Developing correctional emergency plans since the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 require those writing the plans to actively change their paradigms. They must expand their emergency planning activities to the exterior of the facility as well as the interior. For many, many years, we were only concerned with what happened with inside the walls of the facility. Now, we must look to the exterior as we do our planning. The interior and exterior planning are crucial. The interior emergency planning for facilities that incarcerate terrorist inmates also requires a different mindset. Correctional emergency plans should also conform to the government's National Incident Management System, or NIMS, so that in the event of an emergency that will require working with external agencies, the facility will be using the same incident management system that the rest of the nation now must use. So law enforcement, firefighters, EMS, National Guard, all of those now are being trained in the National Incident Management System. The last time I checked, only a few, and basically they were more sheriff's offices than prison systems, were really embracing the NIMS system and having people fully trained in NIMS, and it's just absolutely important that we do that. You read a lot of the government's recommendations, and basically they are recommending that many cities and towns and I would say correctional facilities must be able to stand alone for a period of 72 hours. And when you think of that, that's food and water and medicine and health care and staffing and all the that goes with that. So how many of our emergency plans really truly address that? So I think if you sit back and look at that, that's a rather large task to be accomplished.
So things like the ability to stand alone and these interior and exterior improvements that can be made, are these all things that you think we can accomplish in the near future?
Oh yeah, I think they're all doable. It's just, you know, you have to start, and you can't say, well, we already have emergency plans to do that. Someone has to sit down and look at it and say, okay, we have to stand alone for 72 hours. That means nobody comes in to help us. Nobody gets us, we don't have any electricity, the power's gone. What's the burn rate on our generators? How much fuel do we have in reserve? You know, those are the kinds of tough questions that have to be asked. And yes, you can go to emergency generator power, but do you have enough fuel in your fuel tanks to last those generators for 72 hours? Again, there's a lot of things that people just need to start thinking a lot differently than we ever thought in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's all we have for today. So thanks very much for speaking with us, Bill, and we'll all be looking forward to reading your book.
Well, thank you, and hopefully the book will be out by January, and it'll be on corrections.com. And again, if anybody has questions or needs to get in touch with me, and they can do that through you and corrections.com. All right, thanks very much.
So that was Bill Sturgeon, whose new book on terrorism and corrections will be published on corrections.com in early 2008. For corrections.com, I'm Ann Coppola, and thanks for listening.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industries.